All right, glad you're with us. Loaded up today. I mean, we've got a ton. We're going to have breaking news on a lawsuit of the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow, 1 hour from now, where it appears that the FBI under Comey had two guys in the Trump White House from day one that were literally reporting back to him about Donald Trump. In other words, spying. Oh, we don't spy. Yeah, that's the biggest lie. You signed three of the FISA warrants. Yeah, you lied. And you were warned repeatedly that they were unverified. You swore to the court that they were verified. Your own deputy said no dossier. It would be no FISA warrant. And you were told that it's not verified. Clinton paid for it. Steele hates Trump. And you never, ever verified anything. So you have a premeditated fraud on the court. I would not want to be Jim Comey today. I just say he can be as arrogant as he wants to be. Remember what they said in that first report? You know, what he did is dangerous. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have a Daily Mail report that is fascinating today. We're going to get to this as well. Robert Mueller, James Comey made the FBI a threat to democracy, lost public trust in its agents, and clouded Donald Trump's presidency by going political. A former agent warning in a new book, the FBI under Mueller undermined public confidence in justice, while James Comey nearly destroyed it completely. Ex-FBI agent Michael Germain, a 16-year-old veteran of law enforcement, writes the former directors of the Bureau turned out into a lawless law enforcer. Now, we have Joe DeGeneva coming up later in the program with Victoria Tunsig. Remember, Joe said, I remember flinching when I heard it. Wow, he's a dirty cop. And I remember, oh, geez, that hurts. Because my family's law enforcement. I have such high regard and respect. It hurts when you hear it. But it's all true. And it's becoming more true every day. Anyway, the book Disrupt, Discredit, Divide, How the New FBI Damages Democracy. This is a direct quote. It's in the Daily Mail. The FBI has systemic problems that, left unchecked, make the Bureau a threat to the very democracy it is intended to serve. It's been 2 years. 2018, 2019, the year of the boomerang. I kept saying it's going to boomerang. And I know it's frustrated many of you. Why isn't it happen fast? Why isn't it happen faster? I'm just telling you, you got to. This is all now coming to a head in the weeks ahead. It was a great piece, actually somewhat critical of me in the American Thinker, but I took it in the right light. I understand that there is skepticism of whether we're going to get there. You know, it's very hard when you have, you know, if it's the what would happen to Sean Hannity, or put your name in place of mine, what would happen to you if you did these things, if you were warned that something is political, opposition party paid for, and not verified, and then later we know unverifiable, and then even after that, we learn that you were warned multiple times before you used it in an application to spy on then a presidential candidate, and that even worse than that, we find out that the FBI, when they finally got around to checking, long after the first, second, and third FISA application, into the dossier's contents and the veracity of it, no, none of this is true. They had their own spreadsheet. Check, no, check, no, check, no. And it's pretty amazing. But it really goes into a very deep. We got to get this guy on, Linda. I know you saw this, but this is crazy. That they have these systemic problems. Very damning history of the FBI claiming that Mueller, who later became the special counsel. Now, how stunning was it? Mueller didn't know what Fusion GPS was. That's not a trick question, sir. That's not a trick question. Didn't know Jeannie Ray was Clinton's attorney, one of the lead people on his staff. Didn't know any of this. Anyway, claims that you know, if you look at all of this and Mueller's investigation, special counsel, and what happened here, and now we're learning how Comey set this all off with his leaking of these documents, I'm very convinced, because there's so many other bigger things that are coming, that just sit tight. I think if we don't have a dual justice system, and I want to say this especially to the author, what was her name, Jane somebody at The American Thinker. I can't say for sure that I can only say it all happened. The evidence, what we now know on the record, is enough to put any other American under indictment and convicted and in jail. That I can say with 1,000% certainty. Now, I'm hoping and praying that we don't shred our Constitution in this process. There's always that possibility. There's always the possibility that equal justice under the law, equal application of our laws, won't happen. You know, but giving this damning history, just this little bit that we're getting from this this FBI author, you know, claiming that all of this, that they wanted to remake the FBI in their own image, no room for dissent, all safeguards that were brought in. I wrote about this in my first book, Let Freedom Ring, about the Church Committee in 75 and bringing about a new era of abuse against citizens, and Mueller's FBI silencing whistleblowers and creating many victims of the FBI, says this author, Germain, who became an advisor to the ACLU after retiring from the FBI, and he's written papers attacking the Bureau. And Comey went further and dispersed it, you know, with the illusion that the Bureau was an important apolitical entity that didn't spy. That's a lie. He just lies repeatedly. Now we're going to find out that he actually had people, his people, reporting to him back in Trump's White House. You did that without a warrant, Jim? Just like you had your deputy FBI director McCabe tell General Flynn that he didn't need a lawyer, and you were bragging about doing something you'd never do under any other president, like Obama or George W. Bush, and take advantage of chaos and go after a 33-year veteran, deny him his Miranda rights, that you take an unverifiable Clinton bought and paid for Russian dossier, and you use it after being warned not to, and you tell the court that it's verified and it's not verified, and then 3 months later you go tell Trump it's salacious but unverified, the opposite, saying it is verified when you sign the thing 3 times. I mean, and then claiming he's a super patriot. It's all now coming into very clear view what has gone on here. And we've got to just hope and pray that we get to the bottom of all of it. Now, Lindsey Graham has formally requested the DOJ declassify the trove of Trump-Russia documents. Now, the president has handed the investigation off, probably rightly so, politically speaking, although it's his authority, to Attorney General Barr, and is letting Barr do his independent investigation. But these documents will detail how the FBI tried to verify, like the hookers in Russia at the Ritz in Moscow urinating on Trump's bed, which never happened. And now that Lindsey Graham's written the Attorney General, William Barr, seeking the declassification, including a chart about the FBI's early efforts to verify the document, well, they didn't do that till after they used the bulk of application Clinton's dirty dossier, Russian dossier. And he specifically, Senator Graham, is asking Barr to declassify the chart that shows the FBI's attempts to verify it. Well, when they finally got to the spreadsheet part of it and the FBI did investigate, they found out it was like Steele under oath said in a interrogatory, "I don't know if it's true. I have no idea." Now, if all I know is if any of you did any of this, you would end up in jail. Now, the question is, can the Department of Justice go after their own? Because we know it happened. And now it's a setup from the beginning. Now that we know it, you know, there's no counterintelligence investigation without it being the president's. Well, the president then was, Barack Obama. And we know from Strzok Page texting that the White House under Barack Obama wanted to know every detail of what was happening as they laughed about, oh, you know, Hillary should win 100 million to zero. And if Trump by any chance happens to win, you know, we have an insurance policy. And all of the, all including briefing, as we now know, remember Susan Rice's CYA memo, which is, oh, the president told us to do everything by the book. Oh, okay. On the day that Donald Trump's being sworn in. Now, because they never expected ever that we'd get to this point because they thought Hillary was going to win. And Comey's higher loyalty, you know, that he told Obama, Biden, Rice about his plans to have that briefing at Trump Tower January 5th, 2017. He, one day before he meets Trump, he's telling, Comey's telling Obama, Biden, everything. Because it's their counterintelligence investigation. It raises the question, what did they know? When did they know it? Anyway, so they talked about all of this, and, you know, Clapper is saying, we've decided Director Comey will meet alone with President-elect to brief him. By the way, even the hacks Korn and Isikoff recognize all of this, but we know we're going to get to the bottom of this some way, some shape, some matter, some form here, and if we don't hold the people accountable, then you might as well take a shredder to the Constitution. You know, I noticed Catherine Herridge reporting that, you know, contributing to the report on Sidney Powell's claim, somebody changed Flynn's FBI 302s. We've known this now for a while. And Sidney Powell accusing Mueller's team of tampering with the 302s. And this was part of the explosive court filing on Friday. And Judge Emmett Sullivan's here in the case. You know, access to some of the General Michael Horowitz's pending report on surveillance. Powell also accusing the Justice Department of withholding documents critical to Flynn's defense, which is the same thing we're hearing about Papadopoulos. And now we know that they're spending an awful lot of time overseas, and that means people like Durham and Barr trying to get to the bottom of whether or not they outsourced spying that would otherwise be illegal on a president and on American citizens. And I think Giuliani nailed it, Comey trying to frame the president, but it wasn't just him. There were very high-level people involved in all of this. And Sidney Powell accusing Mueller's team of prosecutorial misconduct. I think that's right, too. You know, it's just a matter of, okay, now the things that we know that are on the record, who's going to get charged with all these things? By the way, I want to say one other thing before we go to a break here in a second. Oh, the Pentagon freed up $3.6 billion to help build Trump's border wall. Do you remember when I said Trump's changing strategies? Do you remember? They jumped all over me. Oh, Hannity's the only idiot. He believes this. No. I said the president realized he wasn't going to get it from Congress. So he filed his emergency resolution. They couldn't override his veto. And now he's got $3.6 billion extra to help build the border wall. And I said, he's not giving up. I'll accept all of your apologies when you're ready. All right, so when the president said, all right, forget it, I'm not going through Congress, this isn't going to work, I got to find other ways, executive emergency powers, we cited the legislative background authority that gives the president the constitutional authority as commander-in-chief that gives the president the right to do this. Past presidents have all done it. And I said, at the time, I said, well, no, many of my conservative brethren just ripping on me saying, oh, the only one who's defending him is Hannity. I'm like, no, I know how his head works. I know what he's doing. And he just figured, I'm not going to get it this way, or it's going to take years to get it this way. That's not good enough for me. So he took the action. He got the court decision. Well, first, you know, Congress was not able to override his veto. Then he gets the court action defending it. And while the media continues to focus on any way to derail his presidency, well, the president just got $3.6 billion in military construction funding to pay for the president's border wall. Now, what do I always say? He is unrelenting. This president will fight like I'm telling you, like nobody else. He made the promise. He's keeping the promise. Made the promise on judges. Made the promise on tax cuts. Made the promise on deregulation. made the promise on the wall, made the promise on fighting for new trade deals. I know people are getting nervous. The economy's, you know, skittish. We have a trade battle going on with China. I'll talk a little bit about that. President doesn't want to have a trade war. The president wants a deal, but he knows he's not going to get a deal with the president for life, President Xi, unless he shows him that he means what he's saying. And now that China has the worst economy in 27 years and the lowest its currency has been in 11 years, now the Chinese are paying attention and they're kind of trying to calculate, well, is he going to win or not win? Should we wait it out? And if I knew Donald Trump, I'd predict that he probably will say, go ahead, wait it out. I'm going to double the price come January of 2021. That's my guess. Anyway, $3.6 billion now in funding. That means the wall's going to be built. That'll be another promise made, another promise kept, and that'll be not giving up the fight. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Thank you, my buddy Scott Shannon. You know, Scott has the number one morning show in all of New York City, which is massive. The show is incredible. And, I mean, he's the guy that discovered Zoo Radio, Morning Zoo Radio, known for last to first in one ratings book. That's how good this guy's been over the years. Incredible legend. All right, so the Pentagon announced they're going to use $3.6 billion. Now, remember, the president also had another $1.4 billion that he got out of Congress, nowhere near the number he wanted. And the president has said, I can do it as good a job, but at a lower price. And now, apparently, the White House has decided they're now hiring contractors for sections of the wall with very specific specifications that are generally match up to the others to get it done even faster. And the goal is, I think, about 450 completed new miles of wall on top of all the repairs they've made and about 100 miles of new wall to this point. Well, it sounds like somebody is, you know, kind of fighting hard to get the job done. And I just took so much crap. Linda, you remember when I took all that? You do.
Of course.
And I'm conservative. What did I say? I said, you're not reading this right. He's changing strategies. He says, that one's not going to work. Let me do it this way to expedite the process. Because Democrats, they don't care that 90% of the heroin in this country crosses that southern border. Or the fentanyl now that crosses that border with it. And the fentanyl and the opioids and, you know, we're losing nearly 300 people a week, Americans dying from these drugs. Now, I know that you're getting all these lawsuits, all these states, they're going after the manufacturer of OxyContin and so on and so forth. At some point, I guess because they're saying that it was safe and non-addictive or whatever it happens to be, there'll be massive settlements, I'm sure, for years to come. But he didn't stop. That's the guy that I said would do. That's what I said at the time, exactly what he was going to do. And there were people, even some people that were friendly at one point towards me, blasting me, saying, he gave up. No, I didn't give up on the wall. I want the wall. You know what? We got to control the borders. And then at that point, when the president gets that promise completed, then we can have a discussion about everything else. But not if, I guess, you're in a sanctuary state like California or a sanctuary city like San Francisco or where they offer free health care. Anybody can get free health care now in New York City, legal, illegal, doesn't matter, or California. And by the way, my suggestion is if you get sick, just go out. Gavin Newsom said he'll pay for it. Go get your treatment out there. Gavin Newsom desperately wants to be president one day. He's thinking, 22 years, you know, what has he done? Look at what's happening in San Francisco. Look at what we've shown you with Lawrence Jones out on the road. L.A., Chicago, Baltimore. Nobody ever talks about the shootings in these cities. Just mad at Ted Cruz for saying, the obvious, if it's the Odessa shooting, as Governor Abbott said, this guy was already denied a background check. Okay, the same thing when the shootings happened in Houston and Michigan, although that was Joe Biden, that was Joe 30330. It actually happened in El Paso and Dayton. Out in San Francisco, speaking thereof, where all the tent cities are, and they have a feces problem because people are urinating and defecating in the streets, and they have a needle problem. This is all 1 mile from Nancy Pelosi's office in one direction and her home in the other direction. Anyway, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, they have now voted unanimously declaring the National Rifle Association a domestic terrorist organization. Now, I don't even really know where to begin with this. Maybe somebody needs to give them a tutorial on what it is that our Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Period. Well, it didn't mean this gun. You have this discussion every time. And then we find out every law that they are proposing, I call it feel-good legislation. It would not have impacted the shooting that motivated them to once again call for laws that won't impact the shootings that occurred. But it is what it is. The city of what does that mean if you're a member of the NRA, a lifelong member like I am? Does that mean that if I go to San Francisco, now that it's if they voted unanimously that say that the NRA is a domestic terrorist organization, I wonder if that means that I'll get arrested. Do NRA members now have to fear arrest on being part of a terrorist organization? They'll probably want to deport people that are members of the NRA. But this is, remember, look at the Kate Steinle case, which is now back in the news because of court overturn. But, you know, but illegal immigrants that are guilty of crime spend time in jail because of sanctuary city and California sanctuary state status. They don't get in trouble. Here's a interesting thing from Bloomberg News. I guess Comrade de Blasio, who works 7 great hard hours for the people of New York. I got to give him credit. That is really one of the best gigs. If you can get it and you work just 7 hours a week, that is the ultimate in, you know, the new Green Deal mentality. Whether you're willing or unwilling to work, he's willing to work. He's worked 7 hours for the city of New York in the last month. Wasn't that nice of him? Well, anyway, congratulations are in order for the mayor, Comrade de Blasio in New York. He thinks he's qualified to be president. I think he's polling now at 0%, but thanks to his leadership, New York is now the top on the list of American cities that residents can't wait to leave. New York leads all U.S. metro areas as the largest net loser of population. 277 people moving every day, more than double the exodus of 132 just a year ago. L.A., Chicago, they're next with triple-digit daily losses of 201 in L.A., 161 residents in Chicago. People are getting the hell out of there. My problem with all of this is just if you're going to leave, leave your liberal policies there. Don't go to Texas or Florida and ruin those states. Because if you're going to go there and vote for the same people that taxed you and regulated you into leaving, then maybe you got to change your voting patterns. Because you don't want to ruin the next state that you go to. Anyway, a quick update on Hurricane Dorian. We expect tomorrow and Friday in particular to be the days most damaging. Where are we now? I guess we're looking at northern Florida, southern Georgia, Savannah, headed up to Charleston, which has been our concern. Joe Bastardi, WeatherBell.com, official meteorologist of the Sean Hannity Radio Show. How are you?
Well, pretty good. We got some breaking news here. I think Dorian is going to start re-intensifying over the next 12 to 18. Well, it's starting to move, and it's moving. When it moves more than 8 miles an hour and less than 16, the old timers, the people I learned from, that's when hurricanes can keep coming over fresh, warm water, begin to intensify. The other problem with this, Sean, is the shape of the coast. See the way the coast is shaped, we call cyclonically. It actually enhances the upward motion, the convergence into the storm. And so what may happen here, and I'm already beginning to see it, the flight level winds are starting to come up. They're up to 120 knots, and we start seeing that pressure fall. and the eye get better organized. And I'll tell you what, the next 6-7 hours, I guess I'm on the show tonight, they're going to be very interesting to watch this. Now, as it approaches Charleston, it'll start veering off to the northeast. So Charleston, the worst time for this storm is tomorrow morning for you, and then it starts veering off of the northeast, and then you see it coming up the coast, Cape Romaine, probably 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Cape Fear, probably sometime in the very late tomorrow night, and it'll be near Cape Hatteras Friday morning. And again, it looks to me like this is going to try to intensify over the next 12 to 24 hours. This is over the water.
So if you're in Charleston, you advise leaving, Cape Hatteras leaving.
Well, I advise you to do what people tell you to do. Now, I don't know the evacuation plans, but they seem to have been, when I'm looking at things like that, they seem to be on top of it. All I'm trying to do is analyze this, what I'm seeing here with the storm trying to get big, big thunderstorms around the center again, and also looking at the parameters for intensification over the next 12 to 18 hours on the way toward the coast. So it's a pretty dynamic situation, in my opinion.
All right, Joe Bastardi, WeatherBell.com. We'll have an update on Hannity all throughout the night. These are getting to be the important hours we were most worried about. Joe, thank you as always. All right, so as the president gets his $3.6 billion to build the wall to keep fulfill a promise, Democrats have now said the impeachment brigade, the Russia failure crowd, the impeachment, racist, asshole people. Well, they're trying to tank the economy. So far, that's not had any real impact. Now I guess they have a Hail Mary pass because Stormy Daniels is going to testify in October. She's more than willing to testify. Oh, okay. This is insanity. You know, this is impeachment switch. Oh, Mueller failed us. Let's find another reason. I see that the Daily Caller reporting that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is promoting a fundraiser for bail money for a group of protesters that included Antifa members. Apparently there was a, quote, straight pride parade in Boston this weekend. One way to support the local LGBTQ community impacted by Boston's white supremacist parade. I think there are like 50 people that showed up at this stupid parade, right? These people need to get a life. I'll tell you that. What are they showing up there for? You know, do we really need people? I don't understand people. I really don't. Go live your own life. We have footage. AOC, who's the first person I was asking yesterday that will tie Dorian to climate change? AOC wins, claiming climate change hits vulnerable communities first. This is what climate change looks like, she said, using the damage from Hurricane Dorian to renew her calls for her new Green Deal and her action on climate change. By the way, as Joe Bastardi often points out, this has gone on forever. He can take you back to the 1800s and tell you what storm, where, and the impact and the damage and the destruction. So this is your Democratic Party. Oh, and they're now threatening the Supreme Court justices. Now Republicans are at least fighting back because they had written a letter to the clerk of the Supreme Court accusing them of threatening the independent judiciary. According to Republicans, every Republican senator signing this letter attacking the amicus brief filed by Democrats submitted in early August, and according to the Republicans, the brief went beyond mere legal arguments, openly threatening the court with political retribution if they failed to dismiss the case in question as moot. And this is the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus New York City prohibiting licensed handgun owners from transporting their handgun to any place outside the city limits. Plaintiffs argue that such law restricts an individual's ability. Well, that's the question I was asking de Blasio that he never wanted to answer, ever. You know, I just want to say one thing. I get what people are saying about the president taking on China. I understand it's disruptive, but I'm looking at a couple of polls here, and the voters seem to understand. There's a Harvard-Harris poll. American voters are supportive of the U.S. confronting China on trade. there's a $500 billion trade deficit. It was a story in the Washington Examiner. And what do we find? Farmers are supporting Donald Trump in the trade war. It's hurting them in the short term. But it's a $500 billion imbalance. We're talking about, how about free and fair trade? Because we don't have fair trade. That means that, oh, our goods being sold to them, you know, are they put all this, we don't sell the same amount with them because they have a one-sided deal. And that's on basically every item. And it adds up to $500 billion trade deficit a year. In the short term, I actually think it's a good idea. Tell China you mean it. And we want free trade now that they have a 27-year low in their economy and an 11-year low in the valuation of their currency. It's gotten their attention, and now they want to pull back. By the way, Joe Biden is bracing his supporters for a loss in Iowa. And they're now saying that Iowa is not a must-win state for Joe Biden in his path to getting the Democratic presidential nomination. Do I think we have to win Iowa? No. Senior advisor telling campaign reporters on background. We think we're going to win. We think it's going to be a dogfight, but we think there are several candidates in this field. There's probably three or four that are going to go a while. Campaign also downplayed the second state, the first primary state, which is New Hampshire, which borders on the home state of Warren and Sanders. As you know, historically, there's an incredible home field advantage. Okay, if Biden loses Iowa and New Hampshire, and Biden has a bad debate next week, Biden's in trouble. Warren in particular seems to be closing in on the polls, the two new latest polls that have come out. But, you know, let's see. With the New York Times switching support and the Washington Post now literally saying there's not a single part of his story that is true. Every detail of that war story is false. And the New York Times just saying he doesn't have it. That's probably a signal to Democrats. You better change gears quick. All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We're joined by the chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice and counsel for President Trump, Jay Sekulow, who is with us with some breaking news today. And this is major about the ACLJ. What do you got?
Well, this is a big development, Sean. So we sent a Freedom of Information Act request into the FBI regarding a story that was covered and then kind of disappeared in the media, and that was the reports that James Comey had placed at least two individuals inside of the White House. They were detailed from the FBI in a very unusual, unheard-of arrangement. Two individuals, Anthony Ferrente and Jordan Ray Kelly, were sent there to work with NSC, National Security Council. Now, what happened was, they were reporting back to James Comey. This is the information we have. They were getting reports from James Comey based on conversation and observations they had of what was going on in the White House. So basically, this is during the counterintelligence investigation.
So in other words, you're saying that you have spies. Two FBI spies.
Yes.
Within the Trump White House. From what point to what point are we talking about here? Give us a timeline.
From the very beginning until about the time that James Comey was fired. So you're talking about 6 or 8 months, and closer to about 7 months. And what happened was when James Comey was fired, out they went. However, this is what's important. There is a troubling pattern here. Both the FBI doesn't want to release these documents, as you can imagine, so we're in court on that. We'll get a court order and get those documents. But we've asked for interchange communications between, ready for this, the FBI General Counsel James Baker, the Acting Director Andrew McCabe, Deputy Assistant Director of Counterintelligence, this will be a familiar name, Peter Strzok, McCabe's deputy counsel, Lisa Page, familiar name, Comey's chief of staff, James Rubicki, also a familiar name, and then some other individuals that have come up, Bill Precept, the counterintelligence division head, and some others. Because we think what was happening here was that there was this pattern where they would send these agents over, they would get reclassified for their jobs, basically put on leave from the FBI, go over to the White House, do the spying for James Comey, report back. And remember this, the Comey told the president he was not under investigation, yet that counterintelligence investigation had started in 2016. And by the time 2017 rolls around, we now knowing all the facts, there was clearly an investigation, and they were targeting the president. There's no doubt about what this was all about. But here we've got these two individuals inside the White House in an arrangement that never previously existed. So this is what is so bizarre about this whole move.
I mean, Rudy's comments this weekend were big. Let's point out a timeline here. Now, he signed 3 of the 4 FISA applications. We're awaiting when we get a hold of Inspector General Horowitz's report on FISA abuse. Now, here's what we do know. We know that there were at least 2, if not more, warnings, direct warnings, one from Bruce Orr to the DOJ, FBI, explicitly saying Steele has a political agenda. It's unverified, meaning that what's in the dossier, and that Hillary Clinton paid for it. All information that was disguised. We also know that the first FISA application was denied, something that was rare, and that the only way they got that October 2016 FISA was, as Deputy FBI Director McCabe said infamously now, if there's no dossier, there is no FISA warrant. So that's a backdoor to spying. But Comey signed that first one. And we know from Rod Rosenstein, that means that he is verifying the contents of the application, which the Graham Grassley memo says is the dossier. But then in January of 2017 at Trump Tower, prior to Donald Trump being sworn in, he tells Trump it's salacious and unverified and that there is no investigation into him. So Comey lied.
No, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, that's beyond dispute at this point. So Comey lied about the entire process. Tells the president the multiple times you're not under investigation when he's got this counterintelligence investigation. Did he commit a fraud on the FISA court? I think we're going to find out that pretty soon. But in this situation, you've got, I mean, think about this in the United States of America, that you've got 2 FBI agents detailed over to spy on the White House to report back to the FBI on what's going on there. They're detailed over to the NSC, talking about, you know, significant information. And then this whole thing is a fraud on the American people. The spying is a fraud. The Mueller team situation was a fraud. And that's a strong word for me to use. But that nonsense with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and wiping clean her phone is outrageous. I mean, that's destruction of evidence.
Wasn't that the special counsel himself, though?
Under his watch. But you saw what was happening there. He obviously wasn't watching.
But why would this surprise you? Because remember, General Flynn asked Deputy McCabe, the deputy director of the FBI, do I need a lawyer? The answer was no.
Not only did he say no, take it back a step further. James Comey testified and said, I got FBI agents in there to interview Flynn because I saw a weakness within the Oval Office because they'd only been in for 8 weeks. I want people to think about this for a moment. The head of the FBI saw a weakness within the Oval Office at the White House where they could get in and do something and do it in a way that would be, you know, fly under the radar. So they went in to do it to what? Set these people up. This is an outrage. And I think when you see the Durham report, all of this is going to come forward. And that's why all of the, you know, all of the nonsense that's going on Capitol Hill right now, you know what it is? Exactly what I said. It is nonsense. It's smoke screens. They know what's coming. They know. Look, even Comey on the left-leaning media got clobbered over this last week. None of this. This was 73 pages of why you should fire James Comey.
Well, it also said Comey's conduct was dangerous, and it is dangerous. But I want to stay focused on this because General Flynn, because if he signed a FISA warrant verifying that the dossier is true. He was warned not to do it. That means we now know it's an unverifiable document. How is that not premeditated fraud on the court when you were warned that it's not verified? And then the FBI, when they finally got around to verifying it, after he had signed 3 of them, they found 90 to almost all of it was bull.
Well, look, I think here's the reality. I think that you're 100% correct. But this is a pattern and practice of this. By the way, one of the aspects of the lawsuit we allege in this lawsuit, not just you violated the Freedom of Information Act, we have alleged that there is a pattern and practice of obfuscating. In other words, not letting you get to the documents that point to the problem. Pattern and practice. It's a second separate count in this lawsuit, which makes it very unique. It's not just you did this, we didn't get the documents, give us the documents. We'll get an order for the documents, but we're going to get a finding that this is a pattern and practice. I'm going to tell you this. Here's what it tells you. The people, some of these people, Sean, are still employed at the Department of Justice. Jordan Ray, still employed right now.
The person I'm most shocked at is Director Ray. Why is he so unwilling to cooperate with Freedom of Information Act requests?
Well, look, I mean, here's what you got. This is entrenched bureaucracy. This is This is, we call it the deep state. These are the people that control. They never want to give information out. So what you've got here, and that's why you got to file suits. I mean, that's why we do it, and that's why other groups like Judicial Watch do it. That's the only way you're going to get the information. But that is deep state stuff. I mean, that's people that have been there and entrenched, and the reaction is always no. But, you know, you mentioned the Flynn matter. I brought that up on our broadcast today. I mean, they saw a weakness, and they exploited it. But I want the American people to, the people listening to this broadcast right now, you mean the head of the FBI saw a weakness in an Oval Office operation that was only 6 or 8 weeks old and decided
no,
to
No,
exploit.
It was actually worse than that, because he sent, in the case of Flynn, and if you're saying this started from day one of the Trump administration, but in the 100%. Case of Flynn, it was day four of the Trump administration.
Yes.
And after McCabe said, you don't need a lawyer, which I would argue denied his Miranda rights and constitutional privileges right there, and should everything should be thrown out. But then he said, he took advantage of the chaos, sent his guys over, and said something he'd never do under the Obama or Bush administrations.
Correct. He said, he would not do it. So you got a guy trying to exploit what he sees as a new administration coming in, and this is the head of your FBI. Pretty awful.
What about a counterintelligence? Any counterintelligence investigation must begin with the president. That would be a president's counterintelligence.
Yep.
That, you know, look, I'm reading reports all day today. Lindsey Graham has formally requested a Department of Justice declassify this trove of Trump-Russia documents detailing how the FBI tried to verify the dossier, but it was after it was used for a warrant. And then the question is, you know, a great article on, I think it was the American Thinker, although from Peggy Ryan, are they ever going to hold anybody accountable? I mean,
I think the answer to that is yes. I mean, I know people are upset about what happened in the Comey
very upset.
Leaking of the information. Yeah, and I get it. And I think, look, I respect and appreciate the job that the Attorney General of the United States is doing. But this was one very, as you said last week on radio and on TV, it was one very little sliver of a much bigger issue. I think there's a lot of accountability coming down the pike here, and I think that's why you're seeing the Democrats call for all these hearings in October, is because they know it's coming. Their time frame on this, Sean, is wrapping up.
That's so you mean now we're going back to Stormy? Is that what you're suggesting?
100%. Why is that coming up now? You know, campaign finance charges, which is absurd. Why is that coming up now? Because they know that the other stuff is done.
We
James
now
Comey
know there was
credible. And Bob Mueller was a disaster for them.
Does it get to the point where you mentioned we're going to have the IG report on FISA abuse? I argue it is incontrovertible at this point. It was an unverifiable document because Steele himself said under oath in an interrogatory in Great Britain, I don't know if any of it was true, but it did become the bulk of information in these applications.
Right.
Then we had the outsourcing of spying to some allied nations, which I believe is going to be a big part of it. If that happened, to circumvent American law, to spy on an American president, you're outsourcing it to our intelligence allies abroad. What would that mean?
Well, it mean that the whole setup was a fraud on the American people. You're outsourcing intelligence.
A fraud or an attempt to influence an election and then maybe over.
I mean, that's what I keep calling it, was a soft coup. It was the beginning of the insurance policy when they didn't know exactly what that policy needed to look like, and that's what this is. And I think the whole Steele dossier nonsense, which is exactly what that was, is nonsense. Comey said it was salacious and unverified. Then why the heck did you sign the FISA warrants based on it?
Well, it's one of the, because he was lying. And now you have
no
to ask,
kidding.
Well, what was
right.
his motivation? Well, he thinks he's a super patriot and that he knew better than the American people.
I
don't understand. Well, he acts like he's
the... He has his view. I mean, the one thing that he does that is just, you know, I don't care what side of the political fence you're on this, but, you know, remember when he circumvented Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, because he thought she was compromised, so he made a prosecutorial decision as if he had the authority to do that?
Right.
Which he did not.
He did not. Well, but, you know, here's the thing, and if you listen to Strzok and Page in their closed-door testimony, they're pointing the finger at the attorney general. That would be Loretta Lynch that the fix was in. But the insurance policy is key here. And the question I want to ask is, we now know, and I believe Obama and Biden were briefed on the issues involving the dossier. Then you get into Susan Rice's memo to self, just as Donald Trump is being sworn in as president. We, the president, said to do everything by the book. Oh, that seems like the biggest CYA I've ever heard.
Uh-huh.
And if you even listen, if you look at David Corn and Michael Isikoff and the things that they write about specifically in their book, that Obama was aware of all of it. The question is, who initiated the counterintelligence investigation, and was it based on Hillary's dossier? And who knew that the dossier was false? And if they didn't know it was false, why didn't they investigate that first?
Because they knew the whole thing was a fraud. So they knew this. This was just a subterfuge to get information. That's all this was. At the end of the day, 2.5 years
What are the consequences for this?
I think there's going to be big
consequences. You know what the feeling of most people?
Some really high-level people in serious trouble. You hearing a lot from James Clapper these days? Hearing a lot from Brennan?
Right.
Nothing. Right.
No. All right, stay right there. We got to take a break. More with Jay Sekulow of American Center for Law and Justice. Lawsuit filed today, FOIA request, and it actually goes a lot deeper than that in terms of pattern and practices and the FBI having two spies in the Trump White House from the get-go, reporting to James Comey. Comey telling the president, president-elect, oh, you're not under investigation? Wow. All right, as we continue, Jay Sekulow, American Center for Law and Justice, filing a lawsuit today, Freedom of Information Act request. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in summary, this is a FOIA request specifically asking for FBI internal documents.
Yes.
That would show part of pattern and practices that there were people that were working for Comey in the Trump White House reporting to Comey. Whatever I guess they could pick up. I mean,
exactly.
Spying
so
on the president.
They're over there to observe what's going on, what people are saying, and then there's information that goes back to James Comey. So we've asked for all records, emails, memorandums, briefs pertaining to FBI agent Anthony Ferrante, who's an advisor on cybersecurity for the NSC. We're requesting information concerning Ferrante's time within the White House and beyond, specifically requesting records and emails between or about Comey and Ferrante and others he may have been communicating with. Yes.
Why do I have a deep suspicion that we might hear the term, clean phones, bleach bit, non-existent? Sidney Powell accused Mueller's team of tampering with General Flynn's FBI 302s. Where do you see that case going?
I think Mueller's team tampered with Peter Strzok, the evidence on Peter Strzok. So would I be shocked if they tampered with evidence involving the 302s of General Flynn? No, I would not. I think they've ended up as a disgrace, frankly, an embarrassment. That's where that ended up.
But, you know, a disgrace and an embarrassment is one thing.
You can't even read that report. I mean, it's incomprehensible what they were even saying. And it was obvious when Bob testified that he had not been supervising this proceeding. Obvious.
All right, this is huge news. We'll have more tonight on Hannity. Jay Sekulow, American Center for Law and Justice, Chief Counsel, Counsel for the President. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. When we come back, more reaction to this news. Quick break, right back. We'll continue.
What I believe is that they ran this entire investigation under what so-called counterintelligence, because you can go to secret courts. You don't have to report what you're doing. You run under a different set of guidelines. Unlike criminal, I think most Americans understand this.
It's very clear that he was also involved in the FISA warrants, all four of which were illegal. We now know as a result of, the reports are being circulated inside and outside the department for comment by interested parties. So we know that all four FISA warrants were illegal. Now, Comey signed the first FISA warrant.
Wait. Let's not go too fast on this. That's a big deal. You just said, based on what your contacts at the FBI, that they know that those four FISA warrants were illegal?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. The Inspector General has concluded that all four of the FISA warrants were obtained illegally.
Wow.
Now, James Comey signed one of those. Rod Rosenstein, Dana Buente, a whole series of people signed these warrants. Now, if I'm the Attorney General, anybody who's still in the department who signed one of these warrants is gone. And that includes Dana Buente, who's currently a senior assistant to Christopher Wray, the current Attorney General.
All right, that was Joe DiGenova, who we will introduce to you in a second. Prior to that, that was Devin Nunes, Comey acting like an agent working for the Crossfire Hurricane team, on top of Jay Sekulow's news at the top of the hour, where the American Center for Law and Justice has filed a lawsuit, a FOIA request, about pattern and practices of Jim Comey under his FBI so-called leadership, literally having two spies in the Trump White House from the minute Donald Trump got into office and demanding all the records, emails, and so on and so forth that would corroborate such. We are joined by Joe DeGeneva and Victoria Tunsing, and they are the dynamic duo of lawyers. Joe first labeling Comey a dirty cop. I remember flinching, Joe, when the first time you said it. But boy, we learned on from the IG report that was an understatement, and I assume in the FISA report of the Inspector General, it's going to be even worse.
Yes, all of that, and I think it's really important for people to just be patient. It's very easy to become stampeded into demanding indictments yesterday, and I understand that instinct. And I appreciate it. And I think the American people have.
By the way, I'm
going
to say this to Victoria because she'll understand. Victoria, you know those comments are directed right at me. That he knows that is not for the broader audience on 620 of the best radio stations in America. That was directed at me. That Hannity's impatient and he's like, where are these indictments?
Impatience is good.
Thank you, Victoria.
There are times that we should show it. But Joe's just giving counsel here that you don't do indictments overnight. By the way, I want to add one other thing to what Devin Nunes said about a counterintelligence investigation and how it's different. In a criminal investigation, it's very limited. You know what the crime is you're investigating. Was the bank robbed? You know, were false statements put someplace? But here, by doing a counterintelligence investigation, the FBI could go out and question people like, hey, George Papadopoulos, what were you doing last March? You know, they could ask all sorts of questions that they never would have been allowed to ask in a criminal investigation.
Let's go through what you were discussing. And we know that the bulk of information, according to the Nunes report, we've been reporting this for 2 years, Joe, the Grassley Graham memos, that in spite of multiple warnings, Kathleen Kavlak, Bruce Orr, and others directly to the DOJ and FBI, that the FISA warrant application first denied was first approved, Andrew McCabe saying no dossier, no FISA warrant. And we know it's an unverifiable document based on Steele's later testimony in an interrogatory. Now, that to me is premeditated fraud on a FISA court for the purpose of ultimately spying on a campaign, a transition team, and a presidency.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I don't think there's any doubt that the FISA warrants were pretextual in nature. In other words, once Judge Collier, the chief judge of the FISA court, stopped the FBI contractors from illegally obtaining information about Americans from the National Security Agency databases and put a stop to it, the FBI people and the DOJ people under Obama had to shift gears, and they shifted to getting information about people or making it look like they were getting information by getting the FISA warrants. They knew that there was no justification for the FISA warrants, but they needed to protect themselves and cover up what they had been doing prior to that. That is what John Durham is looking into. He's also looking into what John Brennan did overseas. Go ahead, Victoria. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no. Please, no, wait, hang on, Victoria. Focus on this. What did John... Because Durham and Barr, according to my sources, have spent a lot of time talking to our Western intelligence allies, intelligence agencies, if that
That's
makes
right,
sense.
Because they want to find out what really started this investigation, because nothing makes sense to any of us who have done this kind of work in our career. And I wanted to just point out, I'm following up on Joe's point about the FISA court cut off the contractors, and it was actually also Admiral Rogers who did so. And that was in April of 2016. And guess what month Fusion GPS was hired?
April 2016.
Bingo.
All right. So there are varying parts of this. I'll put the Hillary rigged investigation aside. Why people don't pay attention to that infuriates me, but okay. So now we have premeditated fraud on a FISA court, denying one American, Carter Page's constitutional rights, but more importantly, a backdoor to spy on all things Trump campaign, then extending into the transition team, then extending into the presidency. You mentioned the people that signed those warrants. Comey signed three of them. He says that he swore under oath that it verifies that this is all true. It's unverifiable. Then he tells Trump a different story. And when he goes to Trump Tower and before he is sworn in, now we know that he had two FBI agents reporting back to him as plants inside the White House.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that this was a very large conspiracy. And I use that word in the legal sense, not in the political sense. This was a conspiracy among senior DOJ and FBI officials and people in the intelligence community to figure out a way to cover up what they had done illegally during the Obama administration by spying on Americans through NSA databases. They had to find a way to get attention away from that. What's interesting to me is that was never going to happen unless she won. In other words, if Hillary won, all of this would have been covered up. We would have never known about the extreme spying that went on at the NSA. But she lost. And once she lost, they went into a very highly controlled panic mode to frame Donald Trump. You know, I hear people laugh about this, even in places like the Washington Examiner. I mean, they have some reporters that have said that the things that I have said today on this show are conspiracy theories. And I've said to them, would you please tell me what's conspiratorial about the facts that are already on the public record? I said, what you do in a situation like this as a former prosecutor is you take facts, reasonable inferences from those facts, you draw conclusions, and then you have a result. And anybody with a brain can see that what was going on here was a conspiracy to frame Donald Trump. Now, the fact that people in the New York Times and the Washington Post don't want to believe that, those people are nuts. They're the screwballs, not the people
Joe,
out there who were doing.
Joe, they're part of the conspiracy. None of this could have gotten out there without the mainstream media. So they urged it on.
They're selling it. They have to sell it because they hate Trump so much that they're willing to say anything. These people have completely abdicated any responsibility of a free press. And it's one of the reasons that many of us who believe that, you know, Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin have introduced an amendment to the First Amendment. They want to overturn Citizens United. And I say, fine, while you're doing that, let's amend New York Times versus Sullivan and restore the negligence standard to libel for public figures. Watch their rear ends tighten up on that baby.
Let me ask you where this is going, and I'm going to tell you where I stopped you earlier, Joe, and it's about patience. I see nothing but premeditated fraud committed on a FISA court for the reasons discussed. I see the outsourcing and subcontracting of intelligence gathering to circumvent American laws to spy on an American president for the purposes of damaging or destroying or undoing an election. Am I wrong in any way? And if that all happened, then what would happen to Sean Hannity test. Sean Hannity would go to jail test.
I think you are absolutely right. And the reason is very simple. If you look at all the facts that are established now on the public record, there is no other conclusion. And if the people in the media want to call that conclusion conspiracy theory, they're right, because there was a conspiracy. It was an illegal conspiracy to deny Donald Trump and other people associated with his campaign due process of law and their civil rights. It isn't even a close case. Now, will there be prosecutions and indictments? I certainly hope so. But I have utmost faith in Bill Barr to make a professional judgment about that. And the reason is very simple. When you look at what he's done, which is to take over a place that has literally fallen into disrepute, the Department of Justice and the FBI, he is single-handedly trying to restore it to a place of honor with the American people. That's the toughest job that's ever been given to a cabinet member in the last 50 years.
So let me ask,
one of the reasons he said that he wasn't going to indict Comey, because it really was not a good case, and he wasn't going to have the department getting involved in cases that should not have been brought, such as the Michael Flynn and George Papadopoulos cases.
How do you answer John Solomon's question, where's the grand jury if there's going to be an indictment?
Well, we hope that there is a grand jury. Step one is to write a full report so that everybody is shamed, including President Obama. He should have been questioned, and so should Joe Biden have been questioned in Durham's report. And then we hope that the evidence shows that there must be a grand jury and indictments should come down.
More with Victoria Tunsing and Joe DiGenova on the other side of the break. All right, as we continue with Joe DeGeneva, Victoria Tunsing, how do you answer John Solomon's question, where's the grand jury if there's going to be an indictment?
Well, we hope that there is a grand jury. Step one is to write a full report so that everybody is shamed, including President Obama. He should have been questioned, and so should Joe Biden have been questioned in Durham's report. And then we hope that the evidence shows that there must be a grand jury and indictments should come down.
Joe, let's go over the laws again, ignoring Hillary's rigged investigation, FISA abuse, premeditated fraud, outsourcing of intelligence agency for the purpose of spying on Americans, including a American president, candidate, transition team, and then president. And how high up does it go? Because Andy McCarthy's argument is you don't have and he's right, legally, a counterintelligence investigation without a president's approval. And we do know about the Susan Rice memo. Barack said do it by the book. And we do know that there was an insurance policy from the Page Strzok text. And we do know that Strzok and Page also texted that the White House wanted to know everything that was happening.
Well, I don't on the available evidence, most importantly, the Susan Rice email on Inauguration Day 2017 of the famous meeting on January the 5th in the Oval Office with the President Obama, Vice President Biden, Susan Rice, John Brennan, James Clapper, James Comey, Sally Yates, and others, that they discussed the counterintelligence investigation against the incoming President of the United States. So make no mistake about it. Barack Obama knew about this. He authorized it. He talked about it. And he countenanced it. And by the way, people have to read Susan Rice's January 20th email, because in there, President Obama instructs the people in the intelligence community to make decisions about whether or not they should not inform the incoming administration of certain intelligence things. That is sedition. In my book, how dare he tell people there may be certain things, Mr. Comey, Mr. Brennan, you left.
Do you believe the attorney? Last question. Exit question.
Share with an incoming president that is sedition.
My sources tell me that there were Russian issues with the other campaign, and that it was handled quite differently as they just approached the campaign. So. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a little talk show host. I don't know much of anything. I'm just.
The FBI warned Dianne Feinstein that she had a spy in her midst. They didn't start investigating her. No, there's different treatment.
All right. Keep on it. Thank you both. Joe, Victoria, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we will continue.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload in the final hour of the Sean Hannity Show.
I've been in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq 28 times. I've been in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan over 29 times. I've been in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq over 30 times.
At the PRT, in a makeshift meeting room surrounded by rocks, mud, and sandbags, but filled with flat screens and computers, a two-star general traveling with us performed an impromptu award ceremony. He gave a bronze star to a corporal who looked to me to be about 25 years old.
I found myself in Iraq being asked by General Ordiano, a four-star, to pin a silver medal on a young captain. I had been asked in a forward operating base in the middle of a godforsaken nowhere in the upper Konar Valley in Afghanistan to pin a silver star on a young, coincidentally, Navy captain in what they call a FOB, a forward operating base. I pinned medals on silver stars on soldiers up in the upper Konar Valley in the middle of a firestorm the poor guys have gone through. Young Navy captain, Navy. Up in the mountains in the Konar Valley in Afghanistan.
Who had pulled a badly wounded gunner to safety, returning fire to repel the enemy, and then keeping his buddy alive until medevac arrived.
Who had pulled someone out of a burning Humvee, risking his life. One of his buddies got shot, fell down a ravine about 60 feet. This guy climbed down a ravine carried this guy up on his back under fire. He had gone down a ravine to rescue one of his men who had been shot, brought him back under hail of gunfire, was wounded, but the young man died.
I know it sounds a little corny, but I don't think there was a dry eye in the house.
And the general wanted me to pin the Silver Star on him. And when I went to pin it on him in front of the entire brigade, and I went to pin the Silver Star with General Rodriguez, pin the general's, the Silver Star on his chest. I got up there and stand, and said, God's truth, my word is a Biden. He stood at attention. I went to pin him. I said, sir, I don't want the damn thing. He stood at me, looked at me, said, sir, I don't want the medal. I don't want the medal. I don't want it, sir. He died. He died. I don't deserve it. Do not pin it on me, sir. Please, sir, do not do that. He died. He died. He died, Mr. Vice President. I don't want the medal. How many nights does that kid go to sleep? Seeing that image in his head. Dealing with it.
Not
you
judgment,
understand
Mr. President. No, not judgment, but details. Because that's something I've heard from some voters, maybe not at your events, but
well,
details.
No, but the details are irrelevant in terms of decision-making. If, in fact, I forget that it was Rodriguez of all the times. I've been in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq and Bosnia and Kosovo as much as anybody, except maybe my deceased friend John McCain and maybe Lindsey Graham. And so the fact that I would forget that it was Rodriguez who was pinning, I believe this is the case, pinning a Bronze Star on a young man, it's irrelevant to the point. It's like saying, I had this very bright reporter and I think her eyes were blue. What difference would it make about whether you were a bright reporter? Your eyes are brown. It's irrelevant and you know it.
Details are irrelevant from Joe 30330. I've been over 28 times, 29 times, 30 times. Something has happened here. And when the New York Times turns on Biden and says, you know, he looks like a man longing for the old days and his days as a potent and fiery stump speaker seem long past, and he's exuding a level of weariness certain days, and he can be unfocused, long-winded, and prone to misstatements as ever, and all his blunders and embarrassments and report that the Washington Post put out, which is almost every detail of Biden's war story is false, coupled with every other gaffe that he's making pretty much every day on the campaign trail, I don't think Joe Biden's going to make it. But anyway, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour on the Sean Hannity Show. We welcome back to the program, Bill O'Reilly. I have in front of me an early copy of his brand new book. I think this is the nicest cover you ever put out. It's called The United States of Trump, How the President Really Sees America, which is coming out, I think, what, in October?
No, September 24th.
Oh, wow, we're getting there, O'Reilly. Time for you to, you know, get out of that, you know, mode you've been in, vacation mode and fishing mode, and get out there and start working hard again.
Well, I'm coming over to your house for the book party. I know you don't know that, but I've already organized.
So you're very welcome to come. It's a construction. Yeah. It's a total construction zone. You're welcome aboard. Just don't step on the nails.
I'm going to send an advance copy to Biden because everything in the United States of Trump is true. There's no, we're not flailing around here. Every single sentence is true.
And I love what you did in the book. I want to compliment you. You took an interview you had with Trump that went on for a pretty lengthy period of time, and you didn't just put the interview in. You interspersed it with basically the history of the Trump administration and also him.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very clever way to do it and kept my interest so far as I'm reading through it.
Well, you know, I want to bring some perspective to the Trump presidency, whether you like him or not. I think it's important for Americans to know the truth about what's happening in the White House. And as you know, we're not getting that truth from the media. It's just not being put out there. So it's not a pro-Trump book, not an anti-Trump book. It's a fact book, a history book. And after you read it, you'll know what the truth is about the man and how he's operating the country.
Let me ask, when you read the Washington Post and their report says almost every detail of his war story is false, and the New York Times says this weekend what I just read, they've turned on him. The polls still show he's ahead, but I don't think the polls mean a darn thing and for Joe Biden right now.
Well, I think he's going to get the nomination if he can get by next week. Remember, Hillary Clinton said she was shot at in Bosnia. Remember that?
I remember.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, that's a lot worse than pinning a medal on somebody. So Hillary Clinton said she was shot at and was so courageous that that didn't stop her from doing whatever she was doing. In the campaign, that didn't resonate at all. And I will submit to you that this won't resonate about Biden. What's going to happen, though, and this is fascinating, is that a week from tomorrow, Biden's going to get up there in Houston. And if he does poorly, then your hypothesis is going to come true, that he's not going to make it. But if he holds his own next Thursday, this is it. This is the third time that Democrat voters will see him. If he can hold his own, I don't think the others have the mass appeal to overtake him. Because remember, Biden is going to run on the Obama platform. He's going to target African-American voters. He's going to do exactly what Barack Obama did with Obama's people. That's how he's going to run his campaign. So if he can get by next week, and, you know, barring someone foreseen, I think Biden's going to be the nominee. And remember the superdelegates, Hannity.
Well, they get the second shot. Of everything.
Yes, they're not bound by any primaries. And that's why the fix was in for Hillary and Bernie Sanders had no shot. That superdelegate thing is going to be in for Biden. The real smart money in the Democratic Party doesn't want socialism because it knows it's going to get defeated. As much as Donald Trump may be controversial, I don't think Americans want to change from capitalism to socialism. That's insane and would cause a depression in America.
But don't you think this is a very this is the tipping point now for Biden? I think you're right with the debate coming up. Look, I'm not saying he's not getting the nomination. I'm saying that there is a great developing real fear of Joe Biden within the Democratic Party ranks. If he look, I saw him this weekend, and this is just my observation. He has changed dramatically since the time he left office. He has aged seemingly like 15 years to me in terms of how he looks. You know, he's hunched over, seemingly has no energy, no fire in his speech. He's not remembering anything. He's misfiring on really important details and facts. He's not even telling one simple story straight on any given day. And these gaffes, I think, I don't see that they can control it even with a teleprompter, because you still have to show up at a debate without a teleprompter.
He's a different guy. Okay, and the Washington Post and the New York Times, they see it too. They agree with you. And their inclination, by the way, is to go socialist. But the folks who decide the election, they're not reading the New York Times. And the Washington Post, they're not. I mean, they're watching him on television, Biden.
Rove thinks that Warren has the best ground game in Iowa, Bill.
Iowa is no way Biden's going to win. And Biden's people even said as much today.
But is he going to win New Hampshire? Where does he win first, South Carolina?
No, he wins New Hampshire, and then he wins South Carolina. And then he's got momentum because African-American voters are going to vote for Joe Biden because Barack Obama is going to tell them to.
I don't see that happening.
Why?
Barack Obama has said he's staying out of it.
Yeah, but he's not. He's not going to stay out of it. Once the field narrows, which it will after next Thursday, look, there's only three of them that have a chance now anyway. Bernie, Warren, and Biden, unless Michelle gets in.
What about Kamala? You think Kamala's out of it?
No. Look, she's had enough time to get some momentum, and she has no momentum. She comes across as flat. She's not inspiring anyone, and you have to be inspirational if you're not that well known. And she's not. She simply isn't.
You know, on the back of the book, it's pretty funny. And I guess I'm not supposed to talk about it yet. Tell your publisher, too bad. But it says, you know, he says, this is a lot of work talking to you, Bill. And you're like, do you want a break? He goes, it's a lot of work. I want to give the perfect answer. It's going to be a great book, you say. I mean, you sound like Trump when you say that, which makes me laugh. Trump says, I'm doing this for you, Bill. I'm not doing this for me. I'm just saying, as I'm answering these very intense questions, maybe I've never been asked before. What are the intense questions that were never asked before?
About his family and his upbringing. He didn't want any part of that at all.
I don't blame him. Do you want me to ask you about your family and your life and your background?
Sure, I don't care. I was the same when I was five that I am now. So.
Yeah, an incorrigible, troublemaker.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I was lucky they let me out of the basement. Well, we didn't have a basement in Levittown, but you know how it is. But Donald Trump's not a high school reunion kind of guy. He's not a look back kind of guy. So he didn't really want to spend a lot of time on why he got sent to military school, his relationship with his siblings and his mother and father. He didn't really want to do that. But you know where I got all that information was from Don Jr., who was really good and very honest. Remember, no anonymous sources in this book. Everybody's on the record.
Thank God, finally, finally.
Yeah, and I know that's going to upset the New York Times and all that, but hey, here's who said it. And we checked it all out in addition to that. So if somebody told me something, I didn't just take their word. I checked it. And if it didn't check, I didn't put it in the book. But anyway, Donald Trump really, he at one point, I thought he called Melania in. And to Melania, he's torturing me, just like he did on television. You have to make him stop. Melania, looks at me and runs out of the office in Air Force One.
She ran out laughing. She loves it.
Right.
I actually think that she is one of his best advisors from what I can see, and I only have about 20 seconds.
She wields a lot of power in that White House very, very subtly. There's no doubt about that. And if she says something, it happens.
Yeah. All right, BillO'Reilly.com. Bill's going to give us the first radio interview when it comes out, the United States of Trump, how the president really sees America. I don't want to give a lot of the book away. I've read most of it, and it's just not fair because your publisher will be calling me with sending cease and desist letters.
No,
but
no, Hannity,
I enjoyed the book. I really do, and I thought it was well written.
They all know that you never obey the rules. They all know.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, I'm really proud of that.
That's why we're successful.
BillO'Reilly.com. Quick break. Jason Chaffetz is coming up next. Then we'll get to your calls. 800-941-SHAWN, toll free number.
We seem to be moving toward a place where impeachment may be inevitable. The dam really seems to be breaking wide open.
This obstruction point is also impossible to look away from, because I think what he was really saying is Congress has a job to do.
They now have the green light, if they want it, from Mueller's statement that the ball is in their court, and now they've got to pick it up and run with it and do the right thing.
The Democratic-controlled Congress will have no choice but to open an impeachment inquiry into President Trump.
Every single day that the president sits in that office, he's obstructing justice, right?
Because if he spoke in plain language, what he would have said today was, anyone who read my report and said no collusion, no obstruction, total exoneration is a big fat liar. That's what he would have said. In English, no lawyer
is. If he had my potty mouth or yours.
The unrestrained.
And in this case, she knows that she gets one shot at this. If she blows it and they don't get him impeached in the House, they won't get him in the Senate, which is also a huge factor here. Mm-hmm. If they don't do the thing correctly in the House, they never get to go after him again on any of this.
All right, 23 now until the top of the hour. You know, that is your media. And when you add all the social media giants and factor in their new algorithms that are designed to purposefully help Democratic candidates and hurt Donald Trump, they're the biggest donors in this 2020 election. I can tell you right up front. Our friend Jason Chaffetz, former congressman, now a colleague at the Fox News Channel, has written a book about all of this. It's called Power Grab, the Liberal Scheme to Undermine Trump, the GOP, and our republic. And he literally goes verse and chapter about how the Democrats would like to negate first the 2016 election, change the rules for the 2020 election. how these so-called charities have been weaponized to help the Democrats win elections. And, you know, there's no government reform. The outcome-driven investigations, their impeachment strategy, you know, as I've been telling you, now they're moving back to stormy because they know the Mueller, Russia, impeachment fell apart. As they just, you know, never admit they're wrong, just move on to the next thing that they can manufacture about Trump. Anyway, former Congressman Chaffetz now joins us. The book is great. It's all true. But how bad is it? And what do people need to know about these new rules changes and what they're really doing?
Oh, thanks, Sean. Look, I spent 8.5 years in Congress. I was the chairman of the Oversight Committee, and they're doing things behind the scenes to pull the levers of government, to snooker the American people. They're also doing things that I believe are right on the verge of, well, let me just say that the IRS should be doing audits of these public charities. You know, one of the things that scares me is that they have gone out and figured out a scheme that would be a violation of campaign finance rules. But they're taking public charities like Planned Parenthood, Southern Poverty Law Center, the ACLU. They're hiring for-profit companies, this campaign company, to go out and do quote-unquote fundraising. But year after year, Sean, they lose money on that, but they keep hiring back. And the reason they do that is so that they can go out under the guise of a public charity and go manipulate the election by doing voter identification. It is the IRS, you know, they targeted conservative groups, but the IRS is giving these people a pass because you can make a political donation. No, it's not tax deductible and your limits of $2,800, but you could give $1 million to the ACLU or Planned Parenthood. And then they just hire a for-profit company to do things that they shouldn't be doing. I took two chapters to talk about this very thing.
Do you think what I just said about, for example, new media, social, these big social media giant algorithms, Google, Facebook, Twitter, do you think that represents an in-kind donation, specifically if they are setting up algorithms designed to push certain narratives that favor Democratic candidates and other narratives that are negative towards Republican candidates or conservative candidates?
Yes, absolutely. There are very strict limitations on advocating for certain companies. You have to structure your organization based on the law. And if you're just doing it as a for-profit company, that is the same as just going out and advocating for, say, Cory Booker or something ridiculous like that. It's the same thing with the same result. And so, yes, I think these people should be audited. I think the FEC and the IRS should be all over their case. But this is these are the new weapons of war. That's why I spent so much time talking about it in Power Grab. This is how they're going to do it. They're not just going to say, hey, we want more power. They're going to change the rules and start doing things that have never been done before.
What does it mean for the country going forward? I mean, if they look, we're supposed to have strict laws on the amounts of money that people can donate. I'll be honest. I'm from a free speech perspective. If George Soros or any billionaire wants to spend a fortune advocating for positions or candidates that they like, I think that's tied to freedom of speech. Don't you?
Yeah, there is a first. You're American, you have money, you want to spend it advocating for something, great, go ahead and do that. But you've got to play by the rules. And there are rules out there. And what the Democrats are doing, they changed the way Congress works. They changed the name of the Committee for Oversight, got rid of the government because they just want to focus on reform. They've weaponized, they figured out how to weaponize Congress to get people this information that they need in order to win campaigns. And the Democrats say out loud, they're willing to do anything and everything to win an election. Let's take them seriously.
All right. So then let's look at 2020 for just a second. I mean, you can see a party that has made a hard radical left turn. You know, Cory Booker, $3 billion for my climate change plan. And
trillion.
I'm sorry, $3 trillion. Excuse me. You know, Bernie Sanders, $16 trillion. I mean, I'm like, okay, guys, we don't have this kind of money, and you want us off oil and gas, the lifeblood of our economy. But more importantly, now that for the first time in 75 years, we're energy independent, we're talking about if you want to raise the standard of living of every American, we need to get all of our energy resources, of which we have an abundance. It's like there's a big gold mine available for the American people. And those are the high-paying career jobs that ensures a healthy, wealthy future and opportunity for every American. They don't want any of that. They want us off of the lifeblood of our economy. What happens then?
Well, they do. They want us to live like Fred Flintstone did back in the Dark Ages. They can't answer the basic economic questions. They're going to fundamentally take away the jobs. But it all comes back to what they ultimately want. They want the power. They want the control. They want to dictate what you do and how you do it. The hypocrisy is off the charts. You detail that every day on your shows, Sean. But I got to tell you, that's what they want. They want the power. Don't do as they say. Just watch what they do. They are just absolutely going to devastate this economy and the country, and we should take them seriously.
What do you think of Nadler's new plan when they finally get back to work? By the way, you worked in Congress. Do you guys, like, ever show up? Because I don't get any vacation like you guys. I mean, the fact that you... Now, there's a part of me that's torn. I would maybe prefer 2 weeks a year. We'll pay you more money to stay away and stop picking our pockets. That'd be great. But in reality, Democrats now, okay, Russia didn't work. Impeach didn't work. Mueller failed, a colossal fail. They expect all this news on, you know, FISA abuse, premeditated fraud on a court, I believe, will be proven. Outsourcing of intelligence gathering to circumvent American laws, I believe that'll be proven. And I hope there's justice. But so now they're going to go back to Stormy? Now we're going to have, money, Stormy again and Kara McDougal again? Is that part of that impeachment strategy you're talking about in the book?
Yes. Duck and cover, America. Congress is coming back into session. It is a job where there are recesses. I don't know of many other job where you have recesses. But I got to tell you, what Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows advocated, they sent a letter last week saying, you know, Inspector General Horowitz should come testify in front of Congress about what he found with Director Comey. Do you think Nadler is calling that hearing? No, he's not. Instead, he's going back to these stupid stories about something that is an allegation that didn't happen and happened before Donald Trump even became president. But that's mm-hmm. where they're focused. This is part of their strategy. It's called outcome-driven investigations. I have a whole chapter in the book about exactly how and why the Democrats do this.
Why is it that Democrats seem better at playing this game than Republicans? And do you agree with that? I mean, if the Democrats, if they want to get to the bottom of something, they're going to be unrelenting no matter how insane their investigations are. Now, no matter how transparent their, you know, bludgeon Trump strategy is, they're just going to keep at it. So my question is, why don't Republicans fight back the same way? They seem weak in comparison.
It's been my complaint for a long time. Republicans, rare to none, do they actually play offense. Fortunately, you have people. I would like to think I was one of those people that was there and did that. But, you know, Meadows, Jordan, Devin Nunes, these people actually know how to play.
All right, Matt Gaetz, Trey Gowdy sometimes, right? I'll give Trey props too. All right, but not Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan didn't want to do any of this.
When you turn around and, you know, start looking, hey, team, where are the rest of you out there? Then they're almost non-existent. The other factor, and I think it is very real, is the national media. My friend Trey Gowdy, former colleague, liked to say, the national media, and certainly the D.C. media, they never met a Republican investigation that they saw fit. But is there a single investigation that the Democrats pursue that is ever criticized by the Democratic media that they ever think should even conclude? I mean, they still can't get off of the Mueller report.
Who do you think wins the Democratic nomination?
I know this is kind of out there, Sean. I don't think it's going to be Joe Biden.
I don't think that's out there at all. I think, you know, Biden was bracing his supporters for a loss in Iowa in the primary. He could also lose New Hampshire. If he loses both, they're done. He's done. I don't think he can recover. Joe 30330 can't recover.
No, I bet where it gets out there, Sean, is where I think there's still possibly somebody that hasn't yet entered the race that will become the nominee, somebody like Bloomberg. I see a group that is very weak. They're very ineffective. Their policies will not fit the general into a general election. As Senator Warren probably has as good a shot right now. I think Kamala Harris has just dropped off the map after Tulsi Gabbard, 2 minutes and she was gone. I think it's a very, very weak field, but I do worry that some other person's going to become the flavor of the month.
So we're going to get the guy. So the guy that banned big gulps and salt on restaurant tables in New York, the guy that wants to take away everybody's gun, you think Nanny State Bloomberg is going to win this thing? Because he'll come off because he won't come off as insane like the rest of the people.
And he's got $1 billion to throw at it. I think the difference. Fundamentally, I think Donald Trump is as strong politically as he's ever been. I think it will clean the clocks and the table. It runs down to about five states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and one or two others.
By the way, it always does, doesn't it? This is the problem for any Republican running for office. If you want to run for national office, you want to be president, you got to thread the needle. You got to win North Carolina, Ohio, Florida. Then you got to pick off, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania. It's hard.
Well, and then you also got to get Nevada and Arizona, which have been more on the bubble. But I don't think anybody can compete with the economy. Look, just gauge it on enthusiasm. I think the enthusiasm index, Donald Trump could show up anywhere in this country and get 100,000 people to show up out of the door. Most of these candidates would be struggling. I mean, they'd have to do phone banks to get 1,000 people out the door. I think Donald Trump, it's his.
All right, Scott, I'm going to have to let you go. I love the book. We'll put it up on Hannity.com. It's called Power Grab, The Liberal Scheme to Undermine Trump, the GOP, and our Republic. Jason Chaffetz, good job. We appreciate you being with us. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, Fox News. We got a great show. Obviously, we're watching very closely the hurricane now headed towards Charleston, Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. We'll follow that. We got WeatherBell.com's Joe Bastardi. All of the deep state news that we have been breaking, including what we heard from Jay Sekulow, he will be joining us, as well as we'll be checking with Devin Nunes and others, all coming up, and all the other news you need to know that the media mob will never tell you. See you tonight. Back here tomorrow.